interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Pi Day, March 14, as the world turns with Will Wade and LSU. Edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're back live at the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here at the Taproom, the famous Clint D inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big or too small, just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. I'll leap right into my take on another wild day in the saga. Here we are, LSU. We know they'll take on Florida tomorrow at noon, and that's not what anybody is talking about when it comes to LSU basketball. Your big sports story nationwide. Will Wade releases a statement early this morning. LSU responds in kind. Battle lines drawn. And I think that there's something from Wade that we witnessed today that is symptomatic of the entire problem for LSU's young head coach. They're suspended and embattled head coach. I'll give you my take. I know you want to get your two cents in as well. I welcome that. First half hour of the show, I got room for you. 706-0111. And I'll get you the full guest list at the end of this segment. We got 3 hours to explore the space. We got a lot of great company joining us today. When it comes to LSU and Will Wade, today reaffirmed for me the following. The level of arrogance that Will Wade just carries around like a chip on his shoulder. Of course, maybe it's not on his shoulder. Dude might need a wheelbarrow. It is incredible. And I tweeted this earlier today. I'll repeat it to you now. What we saw in that statement, to me, displays the same type of arrogance that's got Will in the spot that he's in now. I remember back in the day, people who cheated used to have at least a little bit of disclosure, right? A little bit of integrity and cheating, if you will. I know. It's an oxymoron. But you get where I'm going with this. Wade was absolutely brazen enough to do the dirt himself, to do it over the phone, to pick the wrong guys to deal with, and yet he releases a statement today in which he basically throws his hands up in the air and says, I can't believe LSU is doing this to me. You got to be kidding me. Today was absolutely the next step in the progression of Will Wade strong-arming his employer. And if you want to hear something different, if you need to be coddled and told that LSU's athletic administration are a bunch of bozos, you might be listening to the wrong show today. And anybody that works in the business community, you got to feel me here. The man has refused, based on the advice of his legal counsel, to meet with his employer. They say today he's got good reason to do that. Will Wade says today that he is exercising his constitutional right. And that just couldn't be any further than the truth to me. And I'll give credit here. Glenn Gilbo from the Daily Advertiser, I think, is absolutely crushing it with his reporting. You don't like it, it's because you're emotional, you got blinders on, and you can't see the forest through the trees. But here is, according to LSU legal representation attorney, general counsel, there we go, Thomas Skinner. Here is what Thomas Skinner said today. It is not unlawful or illegal for Wade to talk to us at all. He has the right not to incriminate himself, the Fifth Amendment, in a criminal proceeding, but he does not have the right not to meet with his employer. To me, I mean, that is just slam the door, period, end of story. And so the bigger question is, why haven't they fired this guy yet? I've got some theories on that as well. Part of it is, Wade still has some stroke and support with people on the Board of Supervisors. My opinion is that the statement he made today lessened that. I think he is now drawing his battle line in the sand. It's his right to do that. But I'll tell you, when I first saw this statement this morning, it almost made me wonder aloud is this guy trying to get fired? Is there some kind of end game where he wants this to happen? Because today, otherwise, was the move of a man so arrogant that he'll not attend a meeting with his employers and then tell them, I'm exercising my constitutional right to skip that meeting. I demand that you reinstate me. And he ends the statement, and you can't make this up, with, I don't think that's asking very much. I'm just going to shoot you straight up. That reminded me so much of Randy Marsh from South Park in the Little League baseball episode. It's not even funny. CD, please tell me you've got that on deck.
I'm sorry. I thought this was America.
What do you mean I can't overtly cheat, get caught on wiretap, and then try to tell you, you can't suspend me? I thought this was America. That's all I can think of with this. It blows my mind that Wade took that tack this morning. But the problem with supporting the notion that Wade was trying to get fired with that statement this morning is that that would seem to be chess. And everything that I have observed and been told about Will Wade, look, he's a brilliant mind on the sideline. He's a hard worker. He gets his kids to play for him. He actually is a damn good basketball coach. But I have been told for a year and a half now, this will result in LSU going on probation. I've been told for a long time, from the college side and from the high school side, he wasn't careful enough when he first got to LSU. And now it's all coming to roost. And so the idea suddenly that Wade is doing anything but what he's always done, you got to be careful. He's not playing chess trying to get fired. I think the man is playing very aggressive checkers right now, and he really is arrogant enough and thinks he's bulletproof enough to where he's going to survive all of this. It's absolutely incredible to me, the theater that is playing out in Baton Rouge. I am quite certain some of you don't agree with me. That's fine. Call me. What do you think about Wade's statement? Many in Baton Rouge have lauded it. A lot of emotional fans are saying, oh, this is my ride or die. You got to reinstate him now. Somebody get this man on a flight or a bus to Nashville. I think today was a very clear step further away from that happening. I now fully believe, and I'm talking 100%, that Wade is never going to coach for LSU again. And what leads me to believe that more than ever today is that in LSU's response statement, given to Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, LSU's legal counsel, Mr. Skinner, used two very important words, institutional control. That is LSU doing its posturing. That's LSU getting ready to terminate Will Wade with cause. Now, I'll tell you the same thing today that I told you yesterday in response to one of our callers who said, Ben, why haven't they fired him yet? Because I think anybody who lives and works in the business community recognizes that this is some pretty extreme mutiny. This is an employee calling the shots and trying to make a power play on his employer. That is what's happening here, whether you want to recognize that or not. So to me, LSU using the words institutional control today is one step away from termination with cause, to where in their minds, they're not going to have to pay Wade another dime. But I wonder if that termination is going to happen before LSU's season is over. I think there are two ways this plays out from here. I'll spin it forward. I think Wade is, if LSU loses tomorrow to Florida at noon, I think there's a chance that he gets fired within 24 hours of LSU's short run in the SEC tournament. If it doesn't happen then, I believe it'll happen the day after the Tigers' season ends in the Big Dance. I'd probably lean toward the day after the Big Dance, because I don't think they want to punish these kids. I don't think they want to put a even bigger pall, gray cloud over their season and their chances to make a run with Tony Benford at the helm. But today, LSU's response, again, Wade has put them in this spot where this is all they can do. We talk about Goodell always protecting the shield. Well, whether you like it or not, LSU has to protect their three letters, their shield right now. And today they use the words institutional control, and they said something else that's important. In a week's time, whether via direct communication or a statement, nobody in the Wade camp, including Will Wade, has denied any wrongdoing. Well, then you can't put him back in that chair. You can't reinstate him. It's become some of the most bizarre theater I've ever seen. And no matter what side of the fence you're on, maybe we could just take a moment before we head into our first break to really take it all in and recognize just how bat bleep crazy the entire situation is. And I think it might just get a little bit weirder after today. We got a great lineup today. 4 to 7 p.m., B2BS coming at you from the Tap Room River Ranch. Hunt Palmer will sit in at 4:30. We'll be LSU baseball heavy there. From 5 to 5:30, Jeff Horchek back in the building from KLFY. And I'm fired up. Another live guest at 6 o'clock. In the last 36 hours, he's been named the head football coach and the AD of the Rain Wolves. Kane Guidry will be here at the Tap Room. Wolves fans, come out and celebrate with him. That'll be straight up 6 o'clock and a Q&A replay. Dave Schultz with Billy Napier at 6:30. We'll be right back out to the Tap Room River Ranch. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
All right, I'll get off the pedestal for a little bit. I got 3 hours. I can light this thing up all afternoon into the evening. I'm more interested to hear from you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back into the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. And we'll get into the Saints later. All right, this won't be all Will Wade LSU for your three-hour tour. The Saints have landed Malcolm Brown in free agency. They're entertaining a couple of other free agents as we speak. Ziggy Ansah, who might be able to help fill a defensive end void. What I think could be really, really big. Jared Cook to fill a tight end void. And they've got some extra scratch this year because of Drew Brees. We'll dive more into that later in the program. I've laid out the particulars when it comes to Wade's statement and then LSU's response. And yet, lost in all this somewhat, the fact the Tigers are going to play a basketball game tomorrow. They win it, in my opinion, they should solidify a number two seed. Whether or not the NC2A selection committee gives them that is another story. But it's still an awfully important game. Earlier today, Florida beat Arkansas 66-50 in an 8-9 game, so now we know who the Tigers will be matched up with. I'm curious, with everything swirling around, if they get the dub or not. CD, first the music, and I'll ask it formally. Exciting and new. Your sink or swim question of the day. Will LSU beat Florida tomorrow, noon Central Time, in their opening game of the SEC tournament? Will the Tigers beat the Gators? Call us. Let us know. You can even weigh in on the drama that's playing out right now in BR. Whenever you're ready, 706-0111. CD, please, lead us off.
You know, I kind of got to go sink here, but I'm sinking with a little bit of caution, Ben, largely because of the fact that this has always been a tough matchup for LSU on the hardwood. And we look at the last two ball games, both coming down to overtime, a lot of issues in those games in regulation. This one could very well be a third straight overtime game against these two teams. I'm going to lean towards Florida in this one, so because it also feels like there's too much going on to where you can talk about blocking out the noise. I feel like the noise, it's too loud to ignore.
But I'm not sure, as Ricky Blanton told us on this program some 2 or 3 weeks ago, right after the subpoena report came out, I'm not sure how much 18 to 20-year-olds are going to let some of the outside noise affect them. In fact, I think they're going to come in quite PO'd. And again, with a team that's this talented, if they can channel that, if they can stay out of foul trouble, which was something that plagued this team earlier in the season, we know they can win this game. I'm going to lean toward, yes, they will. And so I'm going to swim. I think LSU is going to beat Florida in the SEC tournament, and I'll go ahead and give you the Babe Ruth. I'll call my shot right now. I think they beat Florida tomorrow. I think they beat South Carolina Saturday at noon, and I think they lose. I would tend to think to Kentucky. They're just so good in this format, in this particular conference tournament. I would tend to think LSU loses to Kentucky, but I'll say LSU gets to the final and falls short. But, yeah, I got them beating Florida tomorrow. And at this point, I think we have to start assuming that Javonte Smart will not be a part of the game plan for Tony Benford and the Tigers. This was something Monday afternoon that everybody thought was, hey, it's on the doorstep. Smart and his mother cooperated as much as humanly possible Friday leading into Monday. Ross Dellinger came on this show and said, yeah, I'm hearing that. We had at least one caller that said, hey, I'm tied into the TAF. And look, hey, I'll entertain those calls, but we don't know Joe Blow any better than you do. So there's no telling the validity of that. But nonetheless, some of the chatter, why don't I put it that way, supported the idea that Smart would be made eligible. Some of the calls I made later that night suggested similar things. So I'm not going to fault our guy from calling in and saying, hey, my connect says this. I get it. But I really am starting to doubt it. Wouldn't it have happened by now? When are they going to let the kid know? Tomorrow morning? During the breakfast shoot-around? I just, if they're playing without Javonte Smart, that doesn't help things. But I know LSU has enough firepower to win without him. The question is, when they play a team that they've gone to overtime with twice, lost at home in OT, won on the road in OT, can they get it done the third time around against Mike White and the Gators? What I will tell you is, I think this is the worst of the two matchups the Tigers could have had. I would have rather seen Arkansas, even with the big kid Madden inside. Florida's a better overall team. I think they locked down better defensively, and they'll force the Tigers to play a little bit more of their game. Clearly, LSU has shown this season they're comfortable if you get them to that pace, but it's just not going to be quite as easy. It'll be a little more cumbersome now that it's Florida instead of Arkansas. All that said, though, I think this LSU team is going to put that chip on its shoulder. I think they're going to play us against the world, and we know they've got the Stallions to get out there and run this race. I think they beat Florida. I think they win two games in Nashville. And even though they lose the final, in my opinion, I think that's enough to where they can't be denied a 2 overall seed in the big dance. That's how I see this playing out. I know I've got all day tomorrow to react. If they get to the semifinal game, we can recalibrate. We'll know more about Smart at that point. But you're going to ask me to play Nostradamus today. That's what I'm going to give you. What are you going to give me? Nobody calling in, huh? You don't like the tough love on Wade because he got popped and I'm calling a spade, that's fine. If you want to go in on tomorrow's game, we got time for that. If you disagree or agree with me, you can let me know on the Big Picture Saga. The number, 706-0111. The thing I do know is this, and I've said this once on the show and I've refrained from repeating it until now. The crowd out there who says that LSU should go for broke here, right? Even once the Yahoo Sports wiretap came out, the crowd that says they should go down with a blaze of glory at this point, after everything that's transpired, they're not legitimately LSU basketball fans, or probably basketball fans at all. They've got a football mentality about LSU basketball. Because here's the thing, they don't care if LSU hoops gets the SMU death penalty. And I'm telling you, if LSU knows what is going on with Wade and Smart, and they can't prove that there was an impropriety, and they trot these guys out there playing and coaching knowing that, you start to go very, very close to institutional control, a lack thereof, and you put yourself in jeopardy for a lot. And so for those of you that say, you know what, go out, win the whole damn thing, and hey, if they get put on the death penalty, then who cares? If you do some damage control, as LSU's trying to now, you might limit the damage to only 2 years of probation. And yes, there's a very real possibility that it gets worse than that. If you feel differently about it, I don't think you're a genuine LSU basketball fan. That's how I feel. Let's get out now to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Andrew, enough for me from now. What you got?
Well, first off, on LSU and tomorrow, I'm with you on the I said earlier this week that LSU went full FU mode over the weekend, and I think they're going to do it again tomorrow. I do think it'll be close. I will say I think the announcement on Smart will be right before the game. I can tell you from a source that LSU has been interviewing two other people involved with the Smart Wade situation. And everything I've been told is that everything they've been told is trending in the good direction. Now, that doesn't mean something changes tonight and he doesn't play, but that's just kind of what I've heard. And then I'll tell you on Wade, before today, I would have said it was 25-75, 25 that Wade coaches again, 35 he didn't. I fully agree with you that after today, it's more like 0.05. He comes back and the rest of it's him gone. Just from a corporate America, anybody who's got has an employer, you can't basically tell your employer F you, first of all, and then on top of that, then call him out publicly doing it. No one survives that, no matter how good you are at your job. Egos are involved now, and it just doesn't work.
Andrew, I appreciate the call. We'll see if you're right about tomorrow, and if it is a game-time decision, that could throw Florida off a little bit. We appreciate the call there. Let's take a few more. Back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. T is with us, and he wants to go in. T does not want to go in. It's a dial tone. CD, do we have Bo that's aboard, or is that also a dial tone?
No, we got Bo in.
Let's do this thing. Back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Bo, got about a minute left. What say you?
Man, I am a fan, and I do say go for broke. You already half pregnant right now. Why not go for the gusto, Reggie Bush style? Nobody remembers he got his stuff stripped.
I'm going to tell you, and I'll give you a chance to respond to this, but I'm going to tell you what the flip side is. Death penalty of the program, potentially, as opposed to 2 or 3 years. If you vote for go for broke, you have to accept the fact that death penalty could happen. Are you really okay with that?
I don't see a death penalty in this situation, and I don't understand why, if Wade's guilty, why he's putting out public statements saying, let me coach. Like, you don't know the full story. I don't see what a death penalty, where is this language starting to come out about this situation?
Well, I'll give you my 2 cents. We got to wind it down. Bo, look, I can at least appreciate your right to say that. I think you might be a little naive about what could happen. I say that with the utmost respect. Because the level of stuff that Wade is accused of doing and on wiretaps doing, I mean, the closest example I can tell you is SMU Pony Express. Just brass. It's out there. Cash in the bag, right? I mean, coach to the handler. No middleman involved. Doing it on the phone. Just arrogance. And again, if LSU feeds into that arrogance, allows him to coach, Smart to play when they know differently, if they do it when they know differently, they've got a lack of institutional control. If you want to roll those type of dice with the NCAA, be my guest. Just be prepared to lose your program for more than a hot minute. We'll be right back. We'll talk LSU baseball with Hunt Palmer. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Fight of the year. When it comes to purple and gold baseball, Hunt Palmer is dialed in. Now, back to the Tap Room, where Hunt schools Ben on Maneri's Men on 103.7 The Game.
After 4 o'clock, right back in to the Tap Room River Ranch. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and yeah, we'll switch it up a little. From Will Wade, LSU discussion on 103.7 The Game. Out aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, it's our friend Hunt Palmer, the Hoops with Hunt podcast, as well as Outside the Box. You can find both at 104.5ESPN.com. Hunt, you get to avoid all the tough questions today. Good for you.
That's a plus on this Thursday, man. I appreciate that very much.
All right, let's start on the plus side of things since you mentioned that. Give me the positives so far that have come away from what's been a split Tuesday, Wednesday, LSU. They lost on the road. They win at home. What's the good that's come out of that so far?
I think Landon Marceau and Mikhail Hilliard on Tuesday night were both very, very sharp, which was great to see. I still, as I said, I think to you last week, I'm still betting on the Landon Marceau come. Like, I really believe he's going to be a really good pitcher for not only down in his career for this team this year. I think he's that good. I think he just had a bumpy start in Austin, and that happens. But he was really sharp in his 3 innings up in Natchitoches. The curveball was sharp. The command of the fastball was good. I really liked what I saw there. And then Mikhail Hilliard as well. really had that thing spinning, and I think looked good. So while it was a really poor offensive night, and that happens throughout the course of a season, but you just wish it wouldn't happen as often. It was a poor offensive night on Tuesday, but the pitching I thought was really good in that game. And then last night, you're playing a terrible baseball team, but I did like to see Zach Watson hit a home run. He did not have one yet, and he's a guy who's got some power. He's done a great job this year of hitting the ball the other way, which he hasn't done a ton of in his first 2 years at Baton Rouge. But you still like to see a little bit of power from him. They need that, and it was good to see him leave the yard last night.
I think you've already alluded to some of the negatives from what's become a two-game midweek, and they win one on the road. Excuse me, win one at home, they lose on the road. Specifically, I guess, who and what portion of the offense maybe is the most disappointing at this juncture?
Well, I don't know if disappointing is the word I would use. I think there are some issues. I think Daniel Cabrera is not going to hit 280 for the year. He's just not. And he is right. He was close to that entering the week. That's going to come up. Zach Watson's not going to go homerless. He hit one. But more so with the offense, he's got a couple of spots right now that aren't giving you anything on offense. And second base is one of them, and I don't think it's fixable. I just don't think Brent Broussard or Hal Hughes are going to give you very much offense. Gavin Dugas is down, obviously, and he's not going to be able to help you for another month. Drew Bianco can't seem to do anything offensively, strikes out far too much. So I think second base is a concern. And obviously, Brock Mathis has hit first. He's slugged a little bit. He's hit some home runs, but he's not going to be a consistent force there. We'll see how that shakes out when Saul Garza gets healthy and is able to catch. Does he take that role? Does he not? But I think this offense is going to be okay. It's not going to be as deep as some of the great LSU lineups over the years. Like I said, I don't think second base is fixable. And, we'll see at catcher. And we'll see what Chris Reed can do continually at third base. I don't expect him to hit 365 and leave the yard like he did earlier this week. But I think that it'll come along. I'm less concerned about the offense as a whole. I think they'll get there. They just need to shake this pitching staff out.
Hunt Palmer, our guest. Great follow on Twitter, at HuntPalmer88. And, again, you can follow his podcasting, 1045ESPN.com. All right, you mentioned the pitching. Let's go there. The decision for the opening SEC weekend against Kentucky, they're going to roll out Hess, then Henry, then Walker. Is this kind of just what's left and what's healthy and available at this point?
No, I think he had some options. I think Landon Marceau was an option. That's why I thought they sat him after three perfect innings on Tuesday. I thought, well, all right, they've seen him kind of regain his command. They'll throw him out there Sunday against Kentucky. But they're going to go back with Eric Walker, who's had some good innings in his starts against Texas and against Cal, but has not been able to extend and get into the fifth, sixth inning of the game. So I think he has some options. He's just going to kind of play it safe, I think, with Hess on Friday and with Walker on Sunday, with Landon Marceau and Mikhail Hilliard ready for action. And, of course, Devin Fontenot and Todd Peterson as well with Matthew Beck back there. They've got some options. I think Cole Henry has earned this in his two starts against Power 5 competition in Texas and Cal. He's gone 7 1/3, allowed one run. He's only walked one, and I think struck out 4 or 5. He's been good, so I think he's earned that, and I'm excited to see what he can do in SEC play. I think that's still in – that weekend rotation is still in flux, but obviously the time for auditions and whatnot is pretty much over. You got to find a way to win 20 conference games, and that starts this weekend.
All right, give me a vote of confidence, if you can, at this point in Todd Peterson, or maybe a reason to believe that some of the early ERA struggles will subside.
Well, he threw the ball pretty well in the midweek. The good news is I would rather get hit all over the yard than walk people. I just can't handle walking people. And Todd Peterson is still throwing strikes. He's still throwing 95 miles an hour. He's still got a good breaking ball. And to me, it doesn't appear that he is that he's lost confidence. I mean, he threw a perfect inning with 3 strikeouts in the midweek. So get him back up on the horse and see what he can do. If he blows another one, yeah, you might look at Devin Fontenot at the end of the games. But right now, I think there's reason. There's track record with Todd Peterson. He's gotten big outs before. He's it's not as if he's hurt. He doesn't feel bad. He hasn't lost velocity. He just got hit a little bit, and I think that happens sometimes. And some of those ground balls that Cal hit are at somebody, he gets out of the inning with a double play. It's just baseball sometimes.
Continuing on with Hunt Palmer, I'll go one more on the diamond. This Kentucky team that's coming to town isn't the juggernaut that they've been in recent years, but I guess what stands out the most about this year's edition of the Wildcats?
Well, they run a lot, and that's a concern because LSU can't throw anybody out. And LSU doesn't have any left-handed pitchers to hold runners. So they're going to be running all weekend. Palmer is going to have to be judicious with his pitch-out selection, and Brock Mathis is going to have to throw somebody out early, or else Kentucky's just going to run. And Zach Thompson, too, they'll see tomorrow, big left-hander who's got great stuff. I mean, Texas Tech got to him a little bit a few weeks ago, but he's dominated the last 2 weeks against bad teams, and he's got really good Friday night SEC stuff. So LSU's going to have to figure it out against a tough lefty. And obviously, you know, Josh Smith, and Antoine Duplantis, and Daniel Cabrera, and a lot of LSU's best hitters are left-handed. So that may not be an ideal matchup for him, but we'll see. The rest of Kentucky staff is not great. And like you said, they're not the offensive team they have been in the past, where they were one of the best lineups in all of college baseball. They're not quite that this year. So this is a good opportunity for LSU to get off to a good start. You got one of the bottom half of the SEC teams, in my opinion, coming to your place to open league play. Got to go out there and win a couple games this weekend and try to potentially get three.
Hun, got to go to the hardwood with you, and I'll keep it strictly in between the lines. Is LSU in trouble tomorrow if Javonte Smart doesn't play? We know that LSU and Florida are about what and what, right? Two overtime games so far, but how much of a difference in your mind does the lack of Javonte make if that's the case?
It makes a difference. I also think that with or without Javonte Smart, Marshall Graves is going to play some minutes tomorrow. And maybe he gives LSU something that they just haven't quite had consistently all year, which is a guy who can knock down some shots from the outside. But I think LSU is better than Florida. It took just a ridiculous game from a bench player. His name's escaped me. He's a good player. I can't even remember who his name now. But he goes for 34 points and just drilling threes from everywhere at home to get the game to overtime. I think LSU should win the game on the glass. I think that LSU kind of figured out how they want to handle Florida in the second half down in Gainesville, go away from the ball screens, which is what Florida defends so well, and let Tremont create it with a little bit more space, and then play a little bit through Nas. I think LSU's okay tomorrow. I think this team is playing with a huge chip on their shoulder. They're public enemy number one in all of college basketball. They're aware of that, and I think it's made for a lot of motivation for this team, and I think they'll play well tomorrow.
All right, I got to let you go with at least a little bit of fun. Any chance that your Cubs are better than my Cardinals this year? Is there any chance of that?
The team that finishes third, like, every year? That team that I don't even pay attention to anymore? Come on now. The Cubs are going to come back healthy this year. They're going to win 98 games. They're going to win the division. Everybody knows that you're not going to make the playoffs again. But the good news is the Cardinals can get an early start on those tee times in October, which they've been accustomed to the last 2 years.
Yeah, look, the course is open on those days for them. So hopefully it doesn't happen this year. But as long as we're not talking about the damn Brewers, you know, come like late September, that would be fine by me.
They don't even have any starting pitching. Yelich isn't going to hit 600 again. They're toast as well. Cubs are back.
There are no closers, just openers. Hunt, we appreciate you being on with us today. We'll keep this going all spring long. Thank you, brother.
All right, Ben, thanks.
How begrudging was that sign-off? All right, Ben, thanks. It's almost like he got the Will Wade lead balloon intro from me. It's just how I feel. Now, I will tell you what I know, because it's come out here within the last 15 or 20 minutes, the Kansas City Chiefs are reportedly agreeing to a 3-year, up to $24 million deal with former Saints defensive end Alex Okafor. So it's been suggested all day long, the Saints have known that they're going to have to rebuild the D-line. They did that earlier today on the interior with Malcolm Brown. Now they're going to have to replace Alex Okafor. Wouldn't you know it? According to Larry Holder, Ziggy Ansah will arrive tonight for his visit in New Orleans. We'll talk a little more about the Saints when we return, and we'll open the phone lines up to you. 706-0111 is the number to play, and then Jeff Horchek will sit in 5 until 5:30. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we'll be back to the Taff Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
I've got a song that ain't got no melody. All the cheating will not stop. I can't take one segment to talk about Saints football. Wait until you hear what we just uncovered in the break. And by we, I mean really hardworking journalist in Baton Rouge. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We, the Talking Heads, are back in on 103.7 The Game. Look, we're having fun at the Taproom River Ranch. And I promise we do want to talk about sports that are on the field and on the court. Let me give you this from Elizabeth Crisp with The Advocate. And I know, and this is Ross Dellinger's wife. Those two are incredibly hardworking. They have sources. When it happens, they know, and typically they know before all of us. There's something that had been rumored in Baton Rouge earlier today. I think it's been fodder on Tiger Droppings. I don't know. I don't really do TD anymore, you know, for a decade or so. But it looks like some of the smoke leads to fire. Will it tie into Will Wade, Ed Ogeron? It's too early to speculate there. But here is what Elizabeth Crisp tweeted out in the break that we just had. At the Lake Health, which is the Our Lady of the Lake Hospital Systems in Baton Rouge, at the Lake Health audit findings on Funes allegations yield that $810,000 were lost, quote-unquote, due to fraudulent activity. More quotes here from Elizabeth Crisp. Again, these are findings on an investigation into the Our Lady of the Lake Hospital Systems. Quote, the forensic investigation also revealed two questionable issues that warranted we notify legal counsel for LSU. And my phone has been blowing up most of today, less about Wade than about this. I don't like to bring anything just grossly unsubstantiated to the show. I'll tell you some of the things I hear behind the scenes, but I'm not going to throw and sling mud at an entire hospital system without having at least some substantiation or having a reporter that has done so. And now I'm sharing with you what Elizabeth Crisp has uncovered. Whoa. So basically, $810,000 that was uncovered during an embezzlement investigation is discovered to be lost due to fraudulent activity, and two questionable issues within that warranted that there need to be reports made that have since been made to legal counsel for LSU. If you haven't put two and two together, the implication is that that embezzled money from Our Lady of the Lake was going toward paying for student athletes. At this point, we just can't get away from it. And Clint, I know that you're a huge South Park fan as well, so maybe we'll tie this in. Your boy Randy Marsh, he's out there and he's got a marijuana farm in Colorado. And what's the name of that farm, Clint?
Tegrity Farms.
Tegrity Farms. And I'll lead to, I guess, some of the same stuff I was expressing in the opening segment. Back in my day when people cheated, damn it, they had a little bit of integrity. Does nobody have any integrity? Any ability to keep under wraps the dirt that they're doing? I mean, this is absolutely stupefying, the level of stuff that continues to come out. Think about the last week alone. And I know that a lot of it hits home because we're here in South Louisiana, but everything with Wade that continues. The NCAA bombshell scandal that, frankly, is probably bigger than the Wade thing, at least it is now, with the Full House mom and the Desperate Housewives lady, one of them, paying for their kids to get into college and basically implementing a system that wasn't unlike what Mark Hudspeth's assistant did with kids taking the ACT in Mississippi years ago. And now there's this. It's not alleged impropriety. There are $810,000 that are missing. That ain't a line item, bro. There's $810,000 that has been discovered to be lost due to fraudulent activity from one of the state's biggest hospital systems. And it took notification to LSU's legal counsel. It warranted it after some of the discovery. So I just, look, is there an influx of great investigative journalists? Hey, perhaps so. The Ross Dellingers and the Elizabeth Crisp of the world deserve all of their credit. Those two are incredible. And I know Ross, on a personal level, the dude is just as genuine as they come, a hard worker, and it's no surprise the success that he has, and I'll add his wife as well. But isn't it just possible that people are sloppier doing their dirt? Doesn't make it any more or less right that they're doing the dirt, but man, just no attempts to cover anything up anymore. Flash, the cash, brazen. It's incredible. All I wanted to talk about in this segment was the Saints signing Malcolm Brown to a 3-year, $15 million deal. They've got an inside interior defensive lineman, and that's great. They're going to lose one on the exterior of the D-line, and they're going to have to replace somebody else. But all we keep circling back to, because it is not only the news du jour, it's the news of, like, the season. Will Wade caught up in everything that's going on with the FBI, forcing LSU's hand to suspend him. And now this idea that there's money that's been embezzled from Our Lady of the Lake that warranted notification of LSU's legal counsel. Why else would LSU need legal counsel? Are they paying for young chemists to go to LSU? I'm just going to have some skepticism about that. Are they paying for the kid that's going in to play for the band? Probably not either. And so if this finds its way into the whole situation with LSU basketball in particular, it's just going to further everything that we've been thinking, and I think many of us know, after some of the wiretaps have been released. Now, here's the other bigger issue. I've been telling you for a week that this news is awful right now for LSU basketball. Boy, it could be bad in the future for LSU football. And if I'm at Ogeron, this Wade thing is bad news, amigo. Bad, bad news. The NCAA being welcomed onto campus, having reason to come. You don't want them exploring the space on your campus. And now there's this finding in an investigation into embezzlement from Our Lady of the Lake. You think they're going to come looking at some of the programs now? So there's the chance for some of this stuff to get very, very hot, bordering on nuclear. At this point, I'm the messenger. I'm sharing with you what we know. As we have more, I'll continue to give it to you. I got to try and break this up. CD, I got to get to the Saints somehow, some way. Let's wind down the hour with something a little different. How about one final word?
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Benevolent. At least that's how it seems, right? Drew Brees clearing $10.8 million of cap space this year by defraying his salary into the future. And look, to an extent, it is benevolent. It is making room for others to come and play in the sandbox. But it is a little more damning toward the future. No, they're not going to owe the dude $40-plus million next year. It'll be spread out years past 2019. Not quite Bobby Bonilla years, but that money is coming around to him. Call it a little bit of a golden parachute when and if he retires. But certainly, in the short term, this is benevolent. There's an opportunity now for the Saints to go after Ziggy Ansah, who will be in tonight, Jared Cook, who's also scheduled to take a visit to New Orleans. And so as the free agency period heats up, really not a lot of wiggle room for the Saints, but at least there's $10.8 million more of wiggle room thanks to Drew Brees. 1 hour down. We got to change the subject a little, right? We'll have Jeff Voracek on the other side from KLFY, and we'll try to do just that. Don't forget, the new Rain Wolves, head football coach at AD, Kane Guidry, hopping aboard at 6 o'clock. We got plenty more show to go. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're dialed in to 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And
live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by Jeff Horchek, live at the Taproom River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. The third member of our three-man weave, the famous Clint D, inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. All right, Jeff, you said you were listening on the way in. Did bad just go to worse?
Well, it's funny because you were mentioning Elizabeth Crisp, this article that she's or this tweet that she has about Our Lady of Lake, and LSU needs to be careful and get some lawyered up because they're going to have some issues with money that I guess was dispersed in a way that may not be legal. Our buddy of mine was at lunch today, and he mentioned it to me and sent me an article. He said, in a roundabout way, this is going to affect LSU athletics and football. So it was so funny that you brought that up about Elizabeth, and then I my buddy tells me that. So there's definitely something to this, you know, and I think that the program now you're seeing it with Will, and it's gonna affect other sports, and it's not a good thing if you're an LSU fan and really for college athletics in general. But let's be honest, Ben, you've been covering college sports for quite a few years. All the big boys do it, and even a lot of the mid majors do it. But the key is you got to be smart. You have to cover your tracks.
Discretion.
And not leave a paper trail. But if somebody gets mad at a program or a coach or whatever and squeals, then that sometimes tips off the FBI, the NCAA, and those type of things. That's usually how those work. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds with Will Wade and with the whole athletic program at LSU. But right now, they've got all the eyes on them and not for the right reasons.
Let's, for the time being, forget about the Our Lady of the Lake report. For the purpose of this conversation, I haven't heard your take yet on Will Wade. In particular, what you think is going to happen when Wade takes the stand April 22nd at this federal corruption trial?
Well, this looks like it's going to be a very bitter divorce. I mean, that's the only thing I can say by looking at it, the way they're going back and forth now. Will making a statement today for the first time publicly since he's been suspended and basically begging for his job back. But he hasn't admitted to any wrong or said anything. I'm sure his legal counsel said you can't do that, which makes sense. But it doesn't seem like there's any remorse on his part at all. And all I know about the United States of America is that we're a very forgiving country for the most part. And if you show that you did wrong and you apologize, I'm not saying you're not going to have to take a penalty and take a hit, but people sometimes will say, you know what, it's okay. Now, Will is a young coach. He was, 34 when he got the job? Young buck, as they say in sports terms. He still had velvet on his antlers, okay? So he was a young guy, and he was moving up the coaching ranks. And I want to tell you a story, too, that I thought about on the way over here. Last year, I went to an LCA basketball game, and I was checking them out, and Will Wade walks in. Now, you did a lot of LCA games last year. Did you see that one game? It was toward the end of the year where he was there. He showed up.
I remember when he was at the games in Lake Charles. He was at the final.
This was in the regular season. This was at LCA.
Home game at the Plex?
Yeah.
I didn't call that game.
Okay. I was there, and I was watching the young man who's at St. John's now.
Greg Williams.
Greg Williams, obviously a talented kid. I'm sure that's who Will was looking at. Maybe looking at some other guys, but obviously checking him out. And he walked in. I immediately recognized him, so he sits down. And at halftime, he came in the first half. At halftime, I went over to him real briefly and said, "Hi, Jeff Horchek, coach, nice to meet you. Hope you're doing well in Baton Rouge. Keep up the good work." Just a real brief little encounter. And after the encounter, he rubbed me the wrong way. And with a quick encounter, I was like, this guy, he's just aloof. He comes off aloof. I'd heard, but I had never. And I don't like to judge people on one quick encounter because he was there scouting and recruiting, and he's focused, you know. And then the whole episode happened with the Cajuns where he flipped off their bench in the NIT game. And all this stuff starts building. Now this – so – and I talked to some people who are basketball insiders, and they said, well, he's very arrogant. When he left VCU to take the LSU job, he didn't even tell his team. He just left. I mean, that's not a classy move. You need to meet with your team. So all those things started leading me to believe this guy is a little slimy, and he's cocky, and he's young. And now you see what's happening. So I can't say I'm totally surprised, but it's unfortunate for him and the program because, you know, a little humility will go a long way. And he clearly thought he was the bee's knees and wasn't as wise as
and still does.
And wasn't as wise as we thought when it came to recruiting, because as a head coach, you know as well as I do, You don't talk on the phone with the middleman. You use the assistants and other people. So he didn't know as much as we thought he did. For
and by the way, they don't talk on the phone either. That's face-to-face.
Face-to-face.
If you and I know that, and we've never been a coach before,
yeah.
I mean, come on, we've all seen,
does that surprise you?
We've
that
all
he,
seen The Wire, right? Come
yeah,
on.
But does that surprise you that he didn't know that? Or did he not care? Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Perfectly put.
You think that's what
it's
it was?
Arrogance. And I don't think I'll put it any better than what I tweeted earlier. To me, Will Wade's attempts to strong-arm his employers at LSU, which today was the next step in line of that, while there are some that are ecstatic about that, it makes him even more of a cult hero. They love him in Baton Rouge. You know, F the world, Will Wade. To me, it speaks to the same level and type of arrogance that got him in the position he's in the first place.
Right.
The man thinks he's bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have any character. See, when you lose, when you have no character, then you're in trouble. You're headed for a downfall. And he was rising up the coaching ranks quick, you know, for a young guy. And he had a good team. He has a good team this year. But when you lose character and you do things you shouldn't do, you know, eventually it's going to catch up to you, and it looks like that's happened to him.
I do have a little bit of news to share with you here. LSU has been forced to release a lot of statements in the last 36 to 72 hours. Here's another one, and this one is on the Our Lady of the Lake forensic audit. Hang with me here. There's a couple of paragraphs. Again, you're just joining us. Elizabeth Crisp with The Advocate reported within the last 30 minutes that a forensic audit by Our Lady of the Lake Hospital System out of Baton Rouge uncovered $810,000 that was missing, quote-unquote, due to fraudulent activity. There were two issues within that that forced this forensic investigative unit to notify LSU legal counsel. Now you're caught up. Here's the latest as LSU responds. LSU can confirm notification in late 2018 by Our Lady of the Lake officials of two findings from their forensic investigation of John Paul Funes. Both findings were reported to the NCAA in 2018. One of the findings is not believed to be a matter of compliance or an NCAA issue. The second finding involves the hiring of a parent of a former LSU student-athlete from 2012 to 2015. The university is actively working with the NCAA to resolve this issue. LSU has and will continue to monitor this matter for compliance, working closely with the NCAA as this is an ongoing legal matter involving other parties. Investigators have requested LSU have no further comments. So they're alleging that this involves two things. One of them's a done deal. NCAA signed off on that. And the other is about hiring a student athlete's parent. There's that, Jeff.
There's a lot to digest there, my friend. And more will come out over time. But I just think this is, you know, it's one of those situations where when it rains, it pours. Once you puncture the wound, then everything else starts coming out, and that's what it looks like. So we'll have to just stay tuned. It's going to be interesting to see what information comes out and who talks, because when you have these audits, man, you have to talk. I mean, this is serious biz. So we'll see. Major college athletics in this day and age, it's risk-reward, my friend.
Yeah, and we continue to hear a lot that it just seems mind-blowing. I'll ask you this, because I have absolutely refused to put on the cap of fan in this whole thing. It's just not how I operate, and I know that you're a lot the same way, coming from a journalistic background. But is there any part of you that understands what seems to be the masses when it comes to LSU fans, that they're outraged that this has happened in terms of the suspension? They're outraged that he's not going to be coaching tomorrow. Is there any part of you that understands or relates to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, fans, I mean, I'm a sports fan like you are with certain teams, and as a fan, you get emotional and you get wrapped up into your team, and you want to see them succeed, and anything that goes against your team, whether it's a bad call, a la Saints-Rams, or if it's a coach that gets suspended or a player, or anything that could hurt your team's chances of winning and succeeding, you don't like it. That's just being a fan. So I understand the fan rage right now when it comes to LSU basketball and maybe the whole athletic program in the coming days. But at the same time, I mean, if you're doing wrong and you get caught, you gotta pay the time, man, pay the price. I mean, that's life. That's the way everything is set up. Now, you were mentioning earlier about this whole cheating scandal at these universities with these Hollywood actresses.
Yes.
And their kids, and that is a monster story that broke this week too, which makes you just shake your head. But it proves to you and me and everybody out there in radio world that you have a lot of people that are trying to get over on the system and cheat. Now, they don't all get caught. The majority probably don't get caught. But when they do, man, it looks bad. And I've always said, you know, good guys, if they do things the right way, it may take them a little longer to get where they want to go compared to the guys that want to get there quick, or ladies, whichever people you're talking about. But if you do it the right way, you never lose, because when you get there, you feel like you did it the right way. And I think you're seeing an example of people that try to get over on the system to elevate their status or their success in their career. And once you get caught doing something you shouldn't do and you know you shouldn't do, then it's worse, you know?
Yeah.
It's worse because then you just buried yourself.
I agree.
And that's what Will Wade has done, and these actresses in Hollywood trying to buy their kids' way in, and all these other people affiliated with these universities and coaches. It's just a shame. But it's not like this hasn't been going on for as long as humans have been around. It's just that when they get caught, and with media now, it becomes bigger.
The cover's being peeled back.
Right,
and
right.
We're looking inside a little bit. Ben Love joined by Jeff Horchek. We're live at the Tap Room River Ranch. Where later tonight? I'm out of here at 7. Well, I'm off the air at 7. I'll stick around for the live music. 8 until 11. You ought to come and join us. No rhythms on the river yet. No problem. Live music, no cover from 8 until 11 o'clock at the Tap Room River Ranch. All right, as we head to a break, I'll make this point. LSU, if they're to be believed at their word, and I have no reason not to, their response to everything going on with Our Lady of the Lake, that would lead me to believe this isn't as big of a deal as maybe that initial splash headline was. But let's see it play out, because right now we've got two different sides. We'll see if it lands somewhere in the middle. Initially, I think it smacks of, wow, are they paying players? LSU's response would lead you to believe that it's not that bad. So we're getting this in real time. We're deciphering it in real time. On the other side of this break, we'll continue with the conversation. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station,
and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Minutes after 5 o'clock. Here we go with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joined by Jeff Horchek, live from the Tap Room River Ranch. You want to play along? Dial us up, 706-0111. I'll stop saying I want to talk Saints, and I'll actually talk Saints. Drew Brees early, and I mean real early this morning, it was announced that he'll allow his contract to be altered to where he could free up $10.8 million of cap space this year. He'll cash in more into the future, no question. But what would you like to see the Saints do with that? Already today, they've landed a defensive tackle from New England, Malcolm Brown, 3 years, $15 million. I guess your thoughts on that, and what's next during this free agency period?
Well, I think it's a good move signing Malcolm Brown, because they need some depth there with Rankins, you know, not knowing when he's going to be back. You've got to get some depth. And, you know, the way they run that defensive line, you need more than four guys. You got to rotate a lot of guys in there to keep them fresh. So that's a good pickup for them. He's a young player. He's only 25. So he's got the best part of his career still ahead. He was very productive in New England coming out of the University of Texas. I believe he went pro a year early, so he came out as a junior. But he's a big run stopper, so that'll be huge. And he's also a good pass rusher. He'll bring a pass rush. And we all know that in the fourth quarter of games, you got to have a pass rush. That can make the difference in a win or loss. So that's a big pickup for them. I think picking up, you know, Murray the other day, the running back, wasn't a bad move. They lost Ingram. He went to sign with Baltimore. They got Jared Cook, apparently, was coming in today, the tight end from Oakland, who's 32, but real tall, rangy guy. Could be a great guy to stretch the field for the offense. So they're looking like they're aggressive in free agency. And then with Drew restructuring his contract, that frees up money for some of these free agents.
And I got news, and I mean breaking news, in the last 2 minutes. According to Diana Russini of the Mothership, Teddy Bridgewater is officially returning to the New Orleans Saints. All indications are that Bridgewater listened, had interest in returning to his hometown and playing for the Miami Dolphins. He has decided to stay in New Orleans as a backup to Drew Brees. You know that means he's probably taking a little more money to stay with New Orleans.
Right.
That's an indication of a pretty healthy franchise, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say. And I think, you know, too, the fact that there's a lot of rumors out there that get spread that, hey, Sean Payton's going to be going to Dallas after this year or two. And a lot of that's spread by their teams because they're trying to keep free agents away from New Orleans. And that may have been the same case with, you know, those rumors coming out of Dallas and maybe even Miami that, hey, Peyton's not going to be there, so Teddy, why do you want to stay there? Come here and you can be a starter. Now, I understand he wants to be a starter, but he knows that Drew's probably got another year or two at best. So, now, Sean Payton could always leave. That's a possibility, but I don't think he's going to Dallas anytime soon. If he was going to go to Dallas, it would have happened by now because he runs the show in New Orleans, and he has a huge ego. And if he goes to Dallas, Jerry Jones is running it. So, yeah, that's big that Teddy's going to come back, give you some insurance for next year. If Drew has to sit out for a few games for some reason, you got a guy who can come in and ride the ship. There was talk that if Teddy was going to sign with Miami, the Saints were going to sign Tannehill. And I'm like, oh, God, that's great. So, you know, if you don't want Tannehill, heck, you might as well try to steal Josh McCown away or something. He's better than Ryan Tannehill. So that's cool. I think Teddy's a smart guy, and he knows, hey, I'm able to sit behind Drew Brees and continue to soak all the knowledge this future Hall of Famer has so that when I get my shot, whether it's here or somewhere else, I'll be ready again. So he's a smart guy.
It'll be better for it.
Yeah. I've always liked Teddy Bridgewater. I liked him when he came out of Louisville. He's very mature for his age. Very mature for his age. And he's always been a straight-laced guy. They say he's a great leader. He had that horrible, unfortunate injury. But he was starting to really come on in Minnesota before that. So I like him as a person, and I like what I've seen so far. And I think that, you know, he's smart. He's making good, smart decisions to set himself up, not just rash decisions. Let me just be a starter, because he's been a starter, you know? He's done it.
And so here are the bigger picture moves that we know for the Saints right now. Leaving the franchise, Alex Okafor, 3-year, $24 million deal. Good for him. He'll be joining the Kansas City Chiefs. That was announced today. Mark Ingram is leaving. He's taking a deal, and one that wasn't too much more money, to go play with the Baltimore Ravens. Some of the indications, Jeff, were, and look, I'll believe Larry Holder of The Athletic every time out of the box. Larry said that Ingram's agent overplayed his hand with the Saints, wanted a little too much. They said, this is a line in the sand we're not going to cross. Then they didn't re-enter negotiations. So the best he could get is what he is getting now with the Baltimore Ravens. So Okafor, Ingram out. You're going to retain Teddy Bridgewater. You're going to bring back a couple of other pieces. I think Chris Banjo they've announced. Right. Craig Robertson, at linebacker.
They signed Lutz.
That's right. Lutz is coming back. But the big splash, I think, so far is Malcolm Brown. Three years, $15 million, and a guy that played a lot of ball for the New England Patriots. I'll take him. I'll take anybody in that system anytime.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's a great pickup. Those are the type of guys you need. Can be real difference makers, especially late in the year. Because, as I said, fourth quarter, got to have a pass rush. That can make a big difference between a win and a loss. Because those linemen wear down throughout the game, and you need guys to rotate in there. And he's a good pass rusher. He's big body. Over 300 pounds, he can plug that run in the middle, and he can also bring the heat to an opposing quarterback. So, nice pickup. He's been very productive and still has the better years of his career ahead because he's only 25.
I'll give the credit here. It looks like at Rev Deuce Windham on the Twitter machine. All right, props to you, Deuce Windham. Malcolm Brown, here's are his averages that he had with the New England Patriots. For every 11.3 snaps, well, that can't be right. Let's see. Averaged a tackle every 11.3 snaps. He averaged 14 tackles for loss. Tyler Davidson, who he'd be compared with, a tackle every 20.8 snaps, so a lot fewer there.
Yeah.
And then 9 tackles for loss as opposed to 14. So I guess the point being this. This is a guy who knows how to get behind the line of scrimmage, and he can help you there. So you mentioned the injury to Rankins. David Onyemata might be in a little hot water with an arrest charge that he has stemming from the New Orleans area. So this helps on the inside. On the outside, we'll see who replaces Alex Okafor. We've been saying it all show, but Ziggy Ansah is coming in on a visit tonight. And then the tight end from Oakland, Jared Cook, also visiting. I'd love to see him answer that tight end question.
Yeah, I would too. I like Cook. I think, you know, he's a guy that's got a few years left in him, some gas left in the tank. Big, tall, rangy tight end, almost like a big, tall receiver. He's 6'5", about what, 240, but he can run. He runs good routes. He's got good hands. And he's a veteran in the league, so he's been there, done that. And I think we need help there. I mean, they only have two tight ends, I believe, on the roster now that Ben Watson's retired. So, and they're really two unproven guys. So you need a guy that, you know, can go over the middle and stretch the field, be a little safety blanket for Drew, and take some heat off of Kamara and Thomas in that passing game.
So the Saints active today, but I don't think their activity's over now that Drew Brees has given some wiggle room. We're about to run out of time. This has been fun. And look, Trooper's here as well. How does Trooper feel about what the Saints are doing?
He's been pretty calm. He hasn't gotten too excited. He said, Jeff, you know, let's just relax and wait and see how the chips fall. You know, it's always fun to get new players, but let's see. He's happy, though, now that he's read the tweet that you read about Teddy re-signing. He's a big Teddy fan.
Okay.
Yeah. He's also a big he's a big Drew Brees fan, too, but he likes Teddy Bridgewater. So he said, I'm happy that he's coming back. We need Teddy. Need some insurance there. You know, don't go to Miami. Even though you're from Miami, the Dolphins stink. Why would you want to play for the Dolphins?
Trooper, you ain't wrong. Jeff, what's coming up tomorrow morning? Pot Spot 2 on KLFY.
Oh, just getting ready for a big weekend. It looks like you got a lot of festivals in town. You got the Celtic Festival. I've got Po' Boy Festival's coming up soon. You've got the Cajun Comic Relief, which is going to be the Hyman Center. It's a charity event. You got Big Brothers Big Sisters Bowling charity event at Rockin' Bowl. So there's a lot going on. And, of course, Downtown Alive, you know,
that's right,
is kicking. So there's a lot going on. So the weather is the key now. We need more sunshine. We don't want any more rain. We've had rain a lot. We're going to have more on that young 18-year-old boy who was shot and killed at the apartment complex, Grand Point, this morning. They have identified him. So Channel 10 has that tonight for him. We'll have more on that tomorrow. And also that shooting at Brown Park and just different events that have happened. We've had, you know, the news never stops.
Well, not to go off on a tangent that's in two different directions there. I know those are dire situations, but you did forget one festival.
Which one was that?
The most famous Irish drinking festival of them all.
Oh,
St. Patrick's Day. Sunday.
You're right. We got the Celtic Festival this weekend, which is, you know,
that's
included
that's
all
true.
That, but at Warehouse 535. But you're right, St. Patrick's Day, it'll be time to drink a couple green beers, right?
I'm looking forward to that. I look forward to this every Thursday. I know you had a little vacation well-earned last week. Thanks for coming back in with Trooper this week.
Thanks for having me, Ben. It's always fun.
All right, we got to hang it up for this segment. We'll be back. Time to throw shade. Take your phone calls. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we're live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
A little hailing. That's Jacques Doucet's music there. Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in on 103.7 The Game. 34 minutes after 5 o'clock, and our phone lines are open for the next half hour until straight up 6 o'clock. Kane Guidry, new head football coach, athletics director at Rain High School, will be with us at 6 o'clock. Make sure you're listening in. He'll be here at the Tap Room. That's always the way to be. So Kane Guidry at 6 o'clock, and then Billy Napier, Q&A replay at 6:30. That's all future talk. Before we take your calls, right now, I got to issue your daily reminder. Really, it's a PSA locally. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents, and know that you can trust in their professional installers. Alex will be the one to work on your shades and awnings, while Todd takes care of the installation of your patio covers in those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. And all it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
You know, this thought occurred to some online, and now it's just occurring to me, so I'll share it with you. The idea that the Saints are able to pay Cam Jordan only $11 million a year is a steal. I mean a steal. And so what I'm not doing is throwing shade at players for getting what the market bears for them. Alex Okafor, three-year, $24 million deal with the Chiefs was announced earlier today. And I'll let you do a ranking comparison. Alex Okafor, $8 million a year. Cam Jordan, $11 million a year. Something there isn't quite right. And I hate it for Cam Jordan. But, man, it's absolutely incredible the savings that they're able to get with that circumstance. So I don't know if you got to throw shade at Cam's agent for this one. The Saints aren't having to re-up him. One thing I do know is this, no shade needs to be thrown at the Saints' best offensive and defensive player. On the offensive side, it's Breeze. Cat restructured his contract today to allow the team to make moves, and he's done it before. On the defensive side, I feel quite certain if Cam Jordan somehow, some way wanted to hold out, if he wanted to channel his inner Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, oh, he could. He's worth a hell of a lot more than $11 million a season. But that's the difference right now, the biggest one, between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New Orleans Saints. One team is black and yellow, and everybody's running from them. The other team is black and gold, and players are taking pay cuts to stay with them. What a beautiful time it is for the New Orleans Saints.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I know, with everything swirling today, you probably didn't expect that for throwing shade, but it just feels redundant to put Wade, the LSU Board of Supervisors, Our Lady of the Lake, it feels a little redundant to put them in that space. But if you're just joining us or you need a refresher, I'll give it to you briefly. Then we'll hit our final break of the show, take more of your calls on the other side. Will Wade released this statement early this morning, in which I will paraphrase. He said that he is exercising his constitutional rights to not visit with his employer. And he demanded that he be reinstated. So consider those things. If you actually say these things out loud and then visualize what would happen if you said these things to your employer, I think you would recognize just how asinine and arrogant that it really is. And I don't know any other way to put it. I'm not anti-Wade. I work in a professional business setting all day long before I come here, and these things to me are unfathomable. Imagine walking up to your employer and saying some semblance of the following. I'm exercising my constitutional rights to not come to a meeting that you've called. But by the way, I'm demanding that you reinstate me to my employment. I don't think this is asking too much. That's how he capped it off. I don't think this is asking too much. It's really kind of hilarious when you think about it. So that's Wade's statement. LSU, with a bit of a rebuttal, said two things that are salient. They said a lot of things, but here's what's important. In a statement given to Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, LSU said, one, in the past week, nobody in Wade's camp, including Wade, has denied wrongdoing. Clearly, that's what they're looking for. We need you to deny the wrongdoing, or if you did some dirt, we need some details. Not because we want to share them, but because we have to make an informed decision to limit the exposure of the program to this damage. Now, Wade is saying we're not coming. Wade's counsel is saying that any such meeting would have involved the NC2A, and we ain't coming. And as I've told you since Monday, if you refuse a meeting with your employer, you kind of accept whatever's coming down the pike after that. So LSU said, nobody's denied wrongdoing to us, and that's a concern. We can't move forward without knowing that. Without knowing that detail, we got to suspend you indefinitely. The other thing LSU said were two words, institutional control. And they're worried about displaying a lack of it, which could put the program in risk of so many different things happening. Now, fast forward to this afternoon, Elizabeth Crisp of The Advocate releases a bombshell, we think. A bombshell, we're not quite sure yet. Again, here's what she reported exactly an hour ago. The Our Lady of the Lake Hospital System audit findings on the allegations, $810,000 were lost. It was discovered in those investigations, and it was due to fraudulent activity. The quote, the forensic investigation also revealed two questionable issues that warranted we notify legal counsel for LSU. The Tigers, with their second statement in about 6 or 7 hours, more or less said that one of these findings is not believed to be a matter of compliance or an NCAA issue. The second involves the hiring of a parent of a former LSU student athlete for 2012 to 2015. The university is actively working with the NCAA to resolve this issue. So that would seem to soften it a little. We'll let the dust settle before we completely decide. All right, let's take our final break in hour number two. Again, we've got time for your phone calls when we return. And then Kane Guidry of the Rain Wolves at 6 o'clock. He'll be here live with me at the Taproom River Ranch. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Coming down the home stretch of hour two. You're dialed into B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Having fun at the Taproom River Ranch. The topic hasn't always been, I don't know, what? Buckets of fun for everybody? Wade, LSU, this Our Lady of the Lake mess that upon second glance, if LSU's response statement is to be believed, is at least somewhat benign. But man, it just keeps pouring. Thankfully, the sun is coming out and the weather, at least, is good outside the Taproom River Ranch. And this is our, first show since daylight savings time. So it's 5:49 p.m. I can see the sun. And I'll be able to see it for at least another, 45 minutes to an hour? Hey, that's not a bad thing. I'll take that. It hadn't been the case, really, for quite some time at the Taproom River Ranch. But if you want to call in, we have time for you. 706-0111. I can update an on-the-court basketball occurrence. Halftime from Lakefront Arena in New Orleans. Bob Marlin, the UL Raging Cajuns, and the South Alabama Jaguars tied at 33. And yes, if the Cajuns lose this game, I would imagine it is sayonara, see you tomorrow, or, you know, next season for the program, unless they want to play in one of those pay-to-play postseason tournaments. But the Cajuns at this point certainly won't make the big dance. You have to win this conference tournament outright to do that, and I don't believe they're going to be in a position to make the NIT. I could be wrong about that. Some of those NIT bracketology experts may call and tell me I'm wrong. But, yeah, that makes this a must-win game. UL, South Al, tied at 33 at the half. Jakeenan Gant, 11 points and 6 rebounds. At intermission, Jericus Davis, 10 points off the bench. So Bob Marlin and the Cajuns battling right now in the Big Easy. They want to live to play another day in advance in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. As far as LSU basketball on the court, we know their opponent tomorrow. It'll be Florida, which I think is the worst of two evils, if I'm being honest. Florida beat Arkansas today 66-50 in the 8-9 game. Arkansas, with Daniel Gafford, presents problems on the interior for LSU. It forces Naz Reid to come down and probably give a little more help to Cavell Bigby Williams, forces LSU to have to play a little more on the interior. But here's the thing with LSU playing Arkansas. They get the style they want. They get to go up and down, right? They get to play fast. LSU likes that tempo. I know. They lost to the Hogs at home, but I think the tempo with Arkansas would have been conducive for this LSU team. With Florida, they want to, and they're going to muck it up. Florida and Georgia are probably the two teams that have given LSU the most problems this year, just stylistically. And so the Gators survived today, as I mentioned, in that 66-50 matchup. They'll get LSU tomorrow at noon. And to date, we still don't have a decision on Javonte Smart. Tony Benford was asked about it over in Nashville earlier this afternoon. In fact, I believe about 40-50 minutes ago, the bullets are flying awfully fast on Twitter these days. I believe I saw a report from Scott Rabelais, the Advocate, quoting Tony Benford, saying that he does not yet have news to share on Javonte Smart. We had a caller to the program earlier. Andrew told us that his people on the inside are indicating that you won't hear anything until right before game time. So here's what I will share with you. we got you covered at Acadiana Sports Station. Quite literally. Usually, it's either me or Dave Schultz with boots on the ground. I want to shout out my man, Raymond Pars III. He's en route to Nash Vegas as we speak. And he'll be doing his show live from Music City. 9 a.m. until 11:30. He'll get an extra 30 minutes tomorrow, taking you right into the pregame show. So Raymond Pars III, rap game with RP3. 9 to 11, we'll be live from Nashville. After that, 11:30 pregame show, noon central tip-off, LSU versus Florida. And I can tell you now that Raymond will be a part of my show as a guest at 4:15. So tomorrow at 4:15, we'll get Raymond from Nashville to give us the fallout, whether it's an LSU win advancing to the semifinal, which will take place Saturday at noon, or LSU bows out and suddenly I think a lot would be in question then. And let's talk about that a little bit as we come down the stretch of our 5 p.m. hour. You're welcome to weigh in. I'll get off the Wade LSU stuff, and I'll get on to the LSU advancing in the postseason talk whenever you're ready. 706-0111. If LSU beats Florida, I think the sheer presence of being in the semifinals, being the number one seed during the regular season, I think that puts LSU in the 2-3 range. If LSU loses to Florida, I think that the selection committee is going to do everything they can to find a way for LSU to maybe drop down to the 4 line. They won't have deserved it, but minus the head coach, potentially with an issue of Javonte Smart's availability, I could see where they'll try to make an argument. Kind of like Brian Snow told you yesterday. It may not be fair, but, hey, this is what they did when Kenyon Martin missed the tournament back in the day with injury, I believe in 99. So there's a lot that's at play with seeding for LSU based on their ability to advance or whether they bow out in the SEC tournament. They could play their way all the way into being the one seed if they win the whole thing, because that'll result in LSU getting to, what, I believe 29 wins? Are you kidding me? 29, I think it would be, before they even get to the NCAA tournament. Plus, they'd have beaten either Kentucky or Tennessee, you would imagine, Sunday in the final. And usually that's the last game that is played leading into the selection committee's decision that's announced at 5 p.m. So if they win all three of the games that are possible in Nashville, LSU rightfully could play their way into a number one seed. They'd also go a long way to dispelling the myth that they're going to struggle without Will Wade. And so, for me, they've got a chance to play into the one seed. They could drop down as low as the 4 seed. They won't have earned it, even if they lose to a good Florida team tomorrow, but I could easily see it happen. After the report from Amy Just, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, that, hey, there are people almost telling you up front, if LSU gives the selection committee a chance, they're going to dock them a seat, almost Kenyon Martin style, right? Can you play without your head coach? I don't know. Can you play without your best player? Those are the things that they're going to say to justify it, but I think we could all agree it'll have at least something to do with the impropriety, right? It'll have something to do that they don't want to give a leg up to Wade after everything that's been released. So these continue to be incredibly interesting times. LSU yesterday took off for Nashville. The team is already there. Javonte Smart is with the team. We're not going to know potentially until right before tip-off whether or not he is eligible to play. If he doesn't, that's going to put a lot on Tremont Waters' shoulders. Trey was dynamite, frankly, on the road at Florida. His coast-to-coast lay-in right at the gun of regulation is the only reason that they had a chance to and ultimately did win the game. Trey was less than stellar, I think we can admit, when they played Florida at home. A game that went to overtime and the Tigers lost. So we'll have more time to discuss that in hour number three. We've also got a couple of dynamite interviews that are lined up for you. My man just entered the building at straight up 6 o'clock. It's a little more than 4 minutes from right now. Kane Guidry, head football coach, AD for the Rain Wolves, will be on, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. There also was a really good combo on our station earlier today. Dave Schultz sat down with Billy Napier, head coach of the Raging Cajuns football program. This is day, I believe, 3 of spring football for UL. So what kind of progress has been made? You're going to want to know what's going on at the quarterback position. You'll get those questions answered and more. Q&A replay with Billy Napier at 6:30. 7:30. This is B2BS. Hey, we're with you until 7 o'clock on the program. And then after we're done, we always stick around for the live music. Come out and join us if you get a chance. From 8 until 11, there's no cover charge. Just great live and local music at the Tap Room River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love here. I'll be joined by Kane Guidry shortly. The famous Clint D back inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we'll both be back in quick, fast, and in a hurry on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Sprinting off the line and into hour number three. Bumper to Bumper Sports still hanging at the Tap Room River Ranch, having a lot of fun on 1037 The Game. Ben Love and joined by Kane Guidry, new head football coach, athletics director for the Rain Wolves. And, Coach, this is a lot of fun to have you here in person. First off, congratulations. You've got the gig at your alma mater. This has to be a dream come true.
It is. You said it. It really is a dream come true. Look, I mean, I'm super excited. There's so much buzz in the community that's been, you know, they've been wanting it for so long. And you know, luckily I'm able to give them that. But like I said, you know, the community's buzzing. Anywhere I go, there's just so much support. And this town, this city of Rain, they've been itching for something like that, someone that they can be, you know, somebody that's one of them, they can, you know, get to know and get to talk to and lead the Wolves, you know.
Before we start talking X's and O's, the new district that you're going to be in, any of that stuff, what did playing for Rain High School football mean to you? When you think back on it, what does it mean?
Well, look, you know, one thing that comes to mind whenever I think about playing for Rain is pride. You know, we always had a lot of pride. You know, we were growing up in the rec leagues, we were always very competitive. You know, we had a good group of kids that competed. You know, you got a lot of kids from the Rain area. You know, if you don't go to Rain High, you have a few kids that straggle over to Notre Dame and Crowley. But, you know, we all know each other very well. And the kids in Rain traditionally, man, just compete very well and have a lot of pride. So, you know, playing for Rain, it was fun. You know, I played quarterback. Unfortunately, we weren't very good back then. We didn't make the playoffs. But, you know, we played hard for our coaches. We fought and, you know, we loved them. And they were some good people and good men. You know, I really learned a lot from those guys.
The last 3 years, as we continue our conversation with Kane Guidry, head coach, football, AD for the Rain Wolves. Those last three seasons, you were over at Crowley. And at least a couple of them you spent under Josh Fontenot, who's now the head coach at Southside. Was it just 1 year?
1 year under Coach Fontenot, yeah.
Tell me about the experience with the Gents.
I'll tell you what, that was probably one of the best things that I did was leaving Rain, even though I didn't want to. You know, I was at Rain for 4 years, left, and went over to Crowley. Got the call from Coach Fontenot, went coached his receivers for a year. And look, Josh Fontenot is an excellent coach. One of the most organized men that I know, does an extremely good job on offense, and so I took a lot from – I learned a lot from him from an organizational standpoint. And matter of fact, I talked to him this afternoon. We still keep in touch, and I touch base with those guys that I worked with and pick their brain a little bit, especially through this process. You know, it's new for me. It's kind of been a little overwhelming, but in a good way, you know. So, you know, that first year with Josh was amazing, man. We, you know, unfortunately, we didn't have a great season. Josh got the call to go to Southside. He ended up taking that gig, and Coach Jeff DeWall took over for the Gents. And, look, Coach Wall's a stand-up guy, a really good coach, comes from a great coaching family. His dad, Dutton Wall, in the Hall of Fame. Nothing but good things to say about Coach Wall and the Gents and the couple years that he gave me and the opportunity that he gave me to call the offense there. You know, I owe him a lot. I really do.
So you've been on staffs with Rain, with Crowley, but we can't forget Notre Dame. And I really thought that the piece that's in the local paper this morning did a fantastic job. Louis Cook kind of saying, hey, this is some of the things that I think he took away from us, but he heaped a lot of praise on you as well. When you talk about a Hall of Famer and Louis Cook, that's got to mean something to you.
Well, look, you know, Coach Cook and I are very close to this day. You know, like you said, I started my career. I can remember it. Todd Gray, who's on the staff with Coach Cook, who's been with him forever, coaches the O-line. One night at a Biddy basketball game, I think I was refereeing it. He says, "Hey, you want to come coach some football?" And I was just finishing up my degree. I said, "Yeah, I do." You know, he said, "Go talk to Coach Cook tomorrow." So next day, I get in my truck, and I'm going over to Crowley, and I sat down with Coach Cook for a long time. He offered me the job to coach the receivers there. You know, took the job. We coached the receivers. We ended up going 15-0 my first year with Coach Cook, won a state championship. So I'm thinking to myself, I said, man, this is pretty easy, you know. But the next 2 years, probably three of the most instrumental years of my coaching career. You know, and it's a young career, but, you know, to this day, you know, those 3 years, I'm telling you, I still go back in my memory bank and use a lot of the things that they do there. Looking forward to implementing a lot of things they do now that I have my own program. Just last week, I was over at Notre Dame on Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, when we were out of school, you know, watching them work out, picking coaches' brain. And I can see it now, it's going to be a weekly thing for sure, where I'm going to give Coach a call and look, he never minds. You know, he always answers the phone and is always, you know, the most polite, genuine person that he can be, you know, and he's always willing to help.
A couple of weeks ago, we had Trev Falk on the program, and he said, look, Louis Cook's one of my mentors. I sponge a ton from him. Now I'm in the same district as him, so I'm not sure I'm still invited back to practice. At least you can still go back to practice.
Well, I'll tell you, no, Coach Cook's one of those guys, too. It really doesn't matter. If he plays you or not, he'll help you. Like I said, genuine. You're a real genuine person, and his ties being, you know, in Rain, you know, He always, and he'll tell you this himself, you know, he always wants Rain to do well. And I believe him. You know, he's a Rain High graduate and he lives in Rain. And, you know, any kind of help we can get from Notre Dame and Coach Cook, we're going to take it. And why not, you know?
Well said. Kane Guidry, our guest, head football coach, AD. And I want to talk a little bit about that athletic director job at the end of the interview. What is the very first thing that you're doing? You've got the job. There's community excitement. How do you get your feet wet, I guess, with the kids when you get on campus?
Well, you know, for a long time, like you said, Rain's had a little success on the field over the last, you know, 14, 15 years. But one thing that I thought that was lacking was community involvement with the previous athletic department, I guess you should say, on the boys' side of it. You know, Coach Garrett, who's head volleyball coach, he's been there for 40 years or whatever. She does an excellent job in organizing the girls. And so my main focus day one stepping on campus was to reunite the athletic department, try to get every sport involved and helping each other. It was kind of a situation, and I can speak from example because I was there for 4 years. And part of the reason I left was there wasn't that family atmosphere that I experienced at Notre Dame coming from there. And now that I've moved on and went to Crowley and experienced that family atmosphere, look, I just know what it takes for an athletic department to thrive. And just, you know, as head football coach, my number one priority is football, you know, but as athletic director, I got to make sure to take care of all these sports, all these athletes, and I'm really looking forward to that. I think the smaller sports kind of got looked over a little bit at Rain, and that's where I kind of want to, you know, clean that up. From the kids' standpoint, look, it's the first thing I did was, you know, the basketball team in our athletic hour, they, you know, we were in the same athletic hour. Well, football is working out by themselves. Basketball is working out by themselves. Just this week, we combined. I said, look, coach, we're going to be a one united group. And my hopes with doing that is getting some of those basketball kids wanting to play football, you know. Maximum participation is my goal. And like I said, man, really just unite that athletic department. And I think, you know, by doing that, it's really going to get the community excited and get them behind not only football but with an entire athletic department.
Understanding from an X and O standpoint that your expertise is on the offensive side of the ball, the Wolves fans and everybody in the Acadiana that wants to know, will Rain's offense look the same? What would you tell them way early?
No, they can get used to seeing something a little bit different from the wing tee. You know, they've been wing tee for the whole time that Coach Ware was there, and then whenever I played, we were also wing tee. So you gotta go back and look. The last 23 or so years has been wing tee. Nothing wrong with the wing T. You know, a lot of things that we do in the offense that I run is wing T-ish. You know, we're just not lining up in the wing T formation every play. You know, the system that we run is very similar to what Coach Cook does at Notre Dame. We're going to be base out of an eye. But, you know, personnel driven determines a lot of what we're going to do, not from a scheme standpoint, but just from a formation standpoint. We want to be simple in our scheme. You know, like I said, we want to be a power run football team in our scheme, but we want to be multiple in the way that we attack it as far as from formation standpoint. We want to try to formation people as much as we can. We can be in the gun. We can be under center. And nothing that we're going to do from a scheme standpoint really differs, you know, depending on what formation we're in. We just like to get our guys in a good situation formationally and try to move the defense around where we want them and to give us the best chance to be successful.
Another couple minutes, and we're having fun. The head football coach, AD, at Rain High School, Kane Guidry, our guest here at the Taproom River Ranch. And it's a good thing that Rain doesn't duck down from challenges, because now you move into a five-team district where you join North Vermilion, LaGrange, Washington Marion, and, oh, by the way, the defending state champs, Eunice,
yeah. Look, Coach Trostclair at Eunice, I was really so happy for him whenever they won that state championship. If there's anybody in the state of Louisiana that deserved it, it was probably Coach Trost. He had been battling some health issues lately, and he's a really good man. I was happy for Eunice. And look, Eunice traditionally has been very good, and they're doing an exceptional job there getting those guys ready to play. You know, at Crowley, we played them the last 3 years. You know, they were in our district there, so I'm very familiar with them. Yeah, very good football team. You know, North Vermilion, Washington Marion LaGrange always has athletes all over the place. North Vermilion, man, I'll tell you what, I just talked to their coordinator, who's a good friend of mine, just a few minutes ago, and they're trending in the right direction. He's doing some good things over there. It's just Stu Cook. You know, him and I are really good friends. We work together at Crowley. So look for them to be better. It's going to be a challenge. You know, with that odd district, we also have a bye week, and we drew week 9. Just so happens Lafayette Christian Academy also drew week 9. So with trying to find a game in the area for week 9, there wasn't many options. So I inherited Lafayette Christian Academy on my schedule week 9, which is going to be a challenge in itself, with Coach Trev Falk doing an exceptional job there.
Any idea where that ball game is going to be played?
That game is going to be in Rain this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a night train that rolls in and
That's
a lot
right.
of fans, but tell me a little bit more before we depart here about the Rain fans. I know they're excited about one of their own coming aboard. You're going to get community involvement at a fever pitch, but what do you hope in lines the stands, comes to the pep rallies? Tell me a little bit more.
Well, you know, and I said this in the article, and I think this is one of the things that I'm going to live by with my program is, you know, we're going to do the right things all the time, putting wins and losses aside. I truly believe in that, and you know, if it costs me some wins and losses, so be it. You know, I'm all about, and I tell the players this all the time. You know, I challenged them just this week. Hey, look, get to know your teachers. You know, on a personal level, and I challenged them. I said, look, I want one of your teachers to approach me and say, look, you football players are some good, genuine young men, and you know, so that's kind of what I'm trying to instill. It's much more important for me to develop young, good quality men than it is football players. But I think that goes hand in hand. I think if we're developing those good young men and doing the right things, then in turn, they're going to turn into good football players. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm going to run the program around. And if you can't get behind that as a fan, you know, I don't think you're a true fan, because we're always going to have those kids, the best interest of those kids at heart. And it's a lot of pride in it for me, being from Rain. I know these people. You know, they feel like they can talk to me at any time. So it's a little bit different. I know it's a double-edged sword there. You know, if there's a time where we're not doing so well, I'm sure I'm going to hear the negative. But, you know, it comes with the territory. But there's one thing about the people of Rain. They're passionate. They really are. They love football. And I know in just talking to the community so far, they're excited. I'm excited. Can't wait to get the season started. You know, we've been in the weight room the last 3 weeks, and I can't say nothing bad about, you know, the group of kids we got. They're working hard, and we're just going to look to build on that, man.
It's the middle of March. Brother, you got me a little fired up as well. Is there a Trent Winbush hanging around campus somewhere?
Well, I think he's at McNeese, but we're going to look for another one.
This was a lot of fun. Coach, I appreciate you coming out today.
Look, thanks for having me.
We got to talk again soon.
Please, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Kane Guidry, head football coach, athletics director of the Rain High School Wolves. We'll take our first break in hour 3. Coming right back in, we'll take your phone calls. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Go 20 minutes after 6 o'clock, right back in with more of the good stuff. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. And here's the thing. Our thanks to Kane Guidry coming on. But the thing is this. When you take over and you wear that many hats, inevitably you could forget something. In this case, he did. But that's why I'm here. I could carry the mail. June 29th, they're going to have a three-man scramble. You need to go check it out. Rain High Football. It's going to be at Bayou Bend in Crowley. Again, June 29th is the date, and that plug just got me a free spot. Now I just need two other men who are very good at golf, and we'll see if we can't work that out. We had a Q&A replay coming your way about 10 minutes from right now with UF football head coach Billy Napier. But between now and then, phone lines are open. Why don't you weigh in? Everything that's going on with LSU, Will Wade, the bizarre report that came out late this afternoon, happened right in the middle of our show, kind of toward the end of hour number one. Elizabeth Crisp of The Advocate reporting that a forensic audit of Our Lady of the Lake revealed $810,000 that was missing due to fraudulent reasons. And there were a couple of issues, too, to be exact, within that forensic audit that warranted notifying LSU legal counsel. That doesn't sound bad on the surface. It sounds horrific. But if LSU, in their response, is to believe this is something that, in part, involves a former player from 2012 to 15 whose parent might have been given a job, NCAA is still looking into that. LSU complying fully. And the other potential issue has already been brought up to the NCAA and is not considered really ongoing at this point. So, again, you're just tuning in. You're wondering, what the hell are you talking about? If that alone wasn't enough for you, go hit the Google machine and see exactly what's going on. Go hit social media. It is bonkers. And I mean absolutely bonkers. The three-ring circus that's been experienced involving LSU basketball for the main part. But, man, this latest intimation that Our Lady of the Lake, a hospital system in Baton Rouge, could somehow be serving as a benefactor to LSU athletics in some way, shape, or form. It's been a wild week. And at this point, you start to believe just about anything you hear, or let me put it this way, believe that just about anything is possible. But what we do know is this. On the hardwood, LSU basketball will take on Florida tomorrow. It's a quarterfinal game of the Sun Belt, the SEC tournament, I should say. Noon Central tip, LSU versus Florida, a couple of teams that played the overtime, not once but twice this year. Each team won on the other's home court. The other thing we know is that the Raging Cajuns, you heard me try to mention, the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, they're playing right now as we speak inside a lakefront arena in New Orleans. It was a tie game, 33-all at the half. See if I can't get you an updated score there. UL and South Alabama. And here we go. With 8:58 to play, CD, in the second half, it has not been a kind post-intermission period for Bob Maher and the Cajuns. I'm seeing 51-57. So a six-point deficit right now. Cajuns trailing South Al. Maybe you can give me a little more information, but as this is a very, very important game, what you're making, what the Cajuns are doing right now, in the Big Easy.
It's actually 57-53 now with 8:41 left in the ball game. This is, I'm just pulling up the stat broadcast right now. They haven't necessarily gotten much done in terms of field goals the last 2:41. I think that's a big reason why that we're seeing the score be the way that it is right now. And at one point they were up, I think, 51-50 after a three ball, but haven't necessarily got anything done after that point.
And what else can you share about the remainder of that tournament, the bracket, and the path for the Raging Cajuns? They came in, I do believe, as the number 5 seed.
Correct.
They're playing the winner of the 8-9 game right now. What happens with the win tomorrow?
Obviously, they'll be moving on to the next round of the postseason, trying to pull up the championship bracket right now to give you an outright fact of who they're going to be playing. They'll play Texas State, who is the number 4 seed, and that tip-off will be the same time, 5 o'clock. And then, if they manage to get to that point, then they've got the semifinal matchup against the number 1 seed, Georgia State, in the semifinals. And boy, that's a tough test, to say the least.
Yeah, long road to hoe. And let's make one thing clear. The Cajuns finished 5th at 10-8 in the SBC. Right ahead of them, a 3-way tie for 2nd. That Texas State team, Clint mentioned, that awaits tomorrow if UO wins today. Texas State, Georgia Southern, Texas Arlington were all 12-6. At the top, a team that the Cajuns would play on Saturday would be Georgia State. And the Panthers at 13-5 were the class of the Sun Belt at least for this season. So LSU, they play tomorrow. They're definitely going to be without their head coach all season long, Will Wade. That part, I think, is very clear. LSU has laid down its battle lines earlier today with the statement. Will Wade did the same, his line in the sand. But will they be minus Javonte Smart? That's something that, bizarrely, at 6:26 p.m., day prior to a noon central tip, we still don't know. And some of the calls into the show so far, some of the insinuations are that you're not going to know until right before tip-off tomorrow. So congrats and good luck on that to Tony Benford. He's got to draw up a game plan that I think he would probably be best off doing without, Javonte Smart included. Now, whether or not there's, you know, a fly in the ointment, something that changes very late, I guess time will tell. But my guess at this point is that's not likely to go down. Otherwise, why wouldn't it have happened so far? All right, we are halfway home with our 6 o'clock hour. On the other side, hey, we've talked a decent amount of football on the show today. Saints at free agency. Kane Gidry is talking rain high football. But we haven't got to the raging Cajuns. This is day 3 of spring ball for the Cajuns out at Cajun Field. And earlier this morning, Dave Schultz, host of Sports Chat, had a chance to sit down with the head Cajun, Billy Napier. We're going to kick that back to you on the other side of this break. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, rolling along, having a great time at the Taproom River Ranch and B2BS. Coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
My man never, and I mean never, fails to hit the high note in that song. Perfect selection, Clint. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in to the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Here's our game plan, and we're ready to execute. We got about 26 minutes to go in today's program. I'll take your calls to end things. I'll circle back to where we started with Will Wade in our next segment. But right now, we need to feed Vermilion and White faithful. Billy Napier, head coach of the Raging Cajuns, getting ready for year 2. And it's really his first chance to not just implement, but continue developing players that have been in the system that's implemented. I think that's important. His second year with a lot of these players, he's got some early enrollees that are on campus. And so spring football has begun here in Cajun country. Earlier this morning, Dave Schultz sat down with Billy Napier. We're going to kick that back your way right now.
Before we look ahead, let's look back. Let's assess year number 1 there, Coach.
Well, a great foundation. You know, certainly made tons of progress. But, you know, we're not satisfied. You know, I think we know there's another level out there. But played better football in the second half of the season. Certainly to get in position and be a contender and win the West and play in the championship game and get bowl eligible was a quality accomplishment. But, you know, we got a lot. We're working our butt off around the building here trying to take it to that next level. And I like the ingredients that we've got. You know, I think we've got enough parts again this year to be a contender. Certainly a little more familiar with our league. You know, last year didn't quite know what we were getting into. So It's been great to be able to keep the majority of our staff intact. But, you know, we're looking to make improvement, looking to take it to the next level. And certainly that starts with a focus on making improvement with the players we have here on campus now. Had a great off season. You know, been working here for about 8 or 9 weeks and then got one practice under our belt Tuesday. And looking forward to working with the team the rest of the way.
So last year, you didn't really know what the quarterback situation was. This year, you sort of at least have someone moving forward with you at the beginning with Levi Lewis.
Yeah, Levi played significant snaps for our team last year. I think it worked out well. Basically committed to playing him every four series. You know, he had a terrific offseason last year. Really a guy who's well-respected amongst his teammates, one of our better leaders, and a very effective player. You know, sometimes gets underappreciated or overlooked because he's small in stature. But, you know, the guy moved our team. We scored when he was in the game, and I think he's got ability. So we're excited about Levi. Certainly he's the leader in the clubhouse. But we're going to have competition. You know, we're going to let these guys shoot it out, and certainly we've got some other players that I think will make some noise, and I think it'll bring out the best in everybody, and that's what we really want.
They say that the biggest improvement during the football season is between week one and week two. Do you think that's the same thing with a new coach and coming to a new team?
Yeah, and I think it really is about everybody in the organization, you know, at every level, you know, not just the players. You know, I was a first-time head football coach, so I think I'm going to make an improvement. You know, I think all of our coaches, in terms of their familiarity with how we do things, like yesterday's practice, you know, we hit the ground running for the most part. So everybody gets a little more efficient. Everybody kind of is beginning knowing what the ending looks like. You know, they kind of know what the final product should look like. So we were swimming this time last year, you know, just trying to teach everyone what it should look like. And, you know, I think whether it's strength and conditioning, whether it's assistant coaches, coordinators, current players, you know, they all know what to expect. We also are doing this offseason and this cycle, you know, with some things in place we didn't have in place last year. You know, we've got a complete academic support program in place now. We have a complete nutrition program in place now. We also have a really good second tier, you know, whether it be quality control coaches or graduate assistants. So, you know, everything's in place now, where last year it was all incremental. You know, I think we're up and running now. I like where we're at. I like the experience our players are getting. And certainly we've benefited from that.
We're talking to head coach of the Raging Cajuns football team, Billy Napier. All right, one more looking back. How long do you think it took before you guys were all on the same page? Was that accomplished in spring ball? Did it take a couple of weeks in fall practice? When do you think, all right, we're sort of, or maybe it took until the middle of the season. How long did it take before everyone was on the same page?
Well, I don't even know if we've even gotten there yet. You know?
That's a good point.
I think, you know, sometimes it just takes time. It takes repetition. It takes a lot of mistakes. You know, it takes, hopefully as we go forward, you know, we've got a history. People help each other out. You know, as we hire new people, they can help each other with the transition. You know, really only hired two people that I had a prior history with. You know, a lot of these guys that were assistant coaches, strength coaches, I hadn't worked with them in the past. So we had a couple guys that had been in that Saban tree, and those guys were huge in that transition. But now everybody kind of knows how we go about our business. Everybody's more efficient with their time, and that's going to be critical going forward. So every year is a different year. New voices, new leadership, about a quarter of your roster and your staff always turns over. So, you know, I like the look in our eye right now, and I'm excited about, you know, trying to get a little better each day and make improvement here throughout spring practice.
All right, let's look ahead a little bit. I don't think I asked this question the way I wanted to, so I figured it out on Tuesday night after your press conference. So if your number one was Billy Napier offense 101, you know, does it get to 200, 300, 400 level? How much can you expanded here in year number two compared to, you know, we just need to get the calls right. We need to get the right personnel on the field. And we're just really kind of doing the basics.
Yeah, I think each year we're kind of going to evaluate the personnel that we have. You know, I think that's the key. Sometimes we think about the plays or the play design. It's really about the players. It's about making sure every time we go to the park, we give certain players an opportunity to make an impact on the game. We were fortunate last year to have an elite group of running backs. We had quality players at receiver, and the quarterback could do just enough. You know, I think that we're going to adapt and evolve based off the people that we have. So we've got a core group of players coming back. You always start with what the quarterback can do well, you know, and certainly – as that unfolds, then we'll kind of adapt our system. It's a very versatile system, but it starts with really good players, and we're fortunate to have a handful of skill players that can really go.
Well, on the defensive side, you're getting one back. He has not played since the bowl game in 2017 against Southern Miss, and that's defensive end Joe Dillon.
Yeah, Joe, man, we're excited about to get Joe back. You know, coming in the door, Joe was thought to be maybe the best defensive player that we had. And then we got the news that he had the hip injury. Really a unique story. Had the same hip diagnosis that Bo Jackson had, which ended his career. Unique deal. We were told that his career was over, and then we kind of started looking around the country for maybe some of the better hip specialists. Sought out a contact in Birmingham. That I was familiar with, got him in touch with those guys, ended up doing a stem cell treatment on his hip. His hip bone started growing back. So really a unique story there. Guys back, clear January 6th, full speed in the offseason program, and certainly didn't disappoint yesterday. You could see where he's going to have a chance to impact our team.
All right, let's talk about the wide receivers. A lot of guys back. One isn't Keenan Barnes, and there are some guys who are new on the team now. Talk about the wide receiver group.
Well, we're fortunate to have Jamarcus Bradley and Bam Jackson both back. You know, both those guys really played well for us last year. Expect those guys to take their game to the next level this year. And then we've got quite a bit of competition after that. You know, over there at Z, Jamal Bell – is a guy who played a little bit last year, had a small role. We need to see the Khalif Gossetts of the world, the Pat Hughes of the world. Sometimes you're going to hear these newcomers' names, Brian Smith Jr., Kalem Reddix. There's a number of players out there that are competing for playing time. And then we got a couple guys we signed that we think are significant players that will be here June 1st. So, really leaning hard on Jamarcus and Bam, and then, you know, let these guys shoot it out and compete. We try to play a lot of players at receiver. You know, I think it's a position where you need about six guys that can play on a consistent basis, but got good leadership in that room. Coach Leze's done a really nice job with those guys, and, you know, I'm anxious to see who kind of surfaces here to the top and can make some plays on a consistent basis.
Every team needs a Bam Jackson, one that doesn't care if he catches the ball or not. Have you always had a player like that? And how entertaining is he when you're practicing and in the film room?
You know, Bam is not only a good player when the ball's in the air, but he plays well without the ball. He's one of our best special teams players and really a class act. You know, a very sharp, intelligent, well-spoken young man who comes from New Orleans and really great attitude. You know, he's we did a career fair last fall, and he got offered two jobs. You know, he's that type of guy, great first impression, and really consistent. And you know exactly what you're going to get each day. And that's one of the things you value as a coach. And certainly I think he's in position to do well for himself regardless of what happens with football. So Bam's a great representative of not only himself, his family, and New Orleans, but this university, our football team. Wish we had more guys like him.
All right, let's wrap it up here with the head coach of the Raging Cajuns football team, Billy Napier. What did you learn about yourself in what year one of being a head coach?
Well, you learned that you need good people around you. You know, I think, you know, we're very fortunate here that we've hired really quality people. I think in about every area of the organization, we got some talented folks. And then you learn the value of time, whether that's spending 20 minutes with you to record an interview, or whether that's time with my three young children, time with my wife. And certainly when you hit the ground running in the morning, you got to have a plan, you know, because you don't get that time back. So just having more discipline, being a first-time head coach, you got to stay on schedule, and not only your time, but your staff's time and your players' time. So I think we'll get better, and that starts with me. And I'm excited about year two, and I think that Cajun fans should be excited because these guys are working really hard. They're doing things the right way, and we've got a talented staff, and we've got a talented group of veteran players coming back.
All right, practice number two of spring practice later on today. Head coach Billy Napier of the Raging Cajuns, thanks so much, Coach, and we'll see you around.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
See, Clint, you're not the only one that gets to correct me. Dave, on his own show, is like retroactively or maybe proactively correcting me there. Yeah, it's day three, but it's really only practice two for the Cajuns, and they're probably wrapping up as we speak. The good news about daylight savings time, you don't have to be in a damn hurry. It's mind-blowing for me. I've been here every Thursday basically since Kingdom Come, and the fact that it's light outside and not about to get dark like in the imminent future, it's just a little bit of a different feel. And that does mean that we can't be too far away from rhythms coming back on the river, and that really makes these Thursdays pop at the Tap Room River Ranch. All right, we'll take our final break of the program. When we return, back to where we started, a little bit on LSU, Will Wade. I'll put a bow on the show. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
The life and times of sports here in South Louisiana. It has been a strange week. I don't think we're done with the strangeness yet. Bumper to Bumper Sports, hey, we're not done either. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. Hanging out, having fun at the Tap Room River Ranch. Don't forget, when we are through, we'll take down the equipment and we'll get ready for the live music, 8 until 11 p.m. And they've got drink specials for the rest of the night. They've got the most delicious wings that you can find here in the River Ranch area. Come drive over. Check out the wings with the Schwing sauce, of course, and more than 40 beers on tap, all at the exact place you would expect, the Tap Room River Ranch. Clint, I made reference to the fact that it's been the strangest of times. LSU basketball, arguably, in the midst of its best ever season. That really isn't hyperbole. Only the 81 team, in my opinion, need apply at this point. I know, 86. The Miracle Tigers, the 11th seed, the Cinderella that got to the big dance, went to the Final Four. I know 86 made it to the Final Four, and so did 06. I know they had highly rated teams, early 90s, right? They had a team in the Jabari Smith, Stromile Swift, Brian Bechera, there you go, CT3 era. That was, I believe, a 4 or a 5 seed, ended up playing Texas that year with Chris Mim. So they've had some teams, my point is, that have been really good. But I don't think anyone that tore through the league quite like this one. I don't think they had a coach that was as excitable on the sidelines, that got people as fired up and believing in the vision and what they could accomplish. And off the court, it all seems to be crumbling down quickly. On the court, time will tell. Our sink or swim question of the day feels like forever and a day ago. In reality, it was about 2 hours and 20 minutes ago. I asked if LSU would beat Florida tomorrow. Clint said no. I said yes. I think we all agree it's going to be close. Why wouldn't it be? They always are between the Gators and the Tigers. Two games this year, two overtime occurrences. And so for me, yeah, I would think that all signs point toward this one being close, sure. But can LSU get a win under Tony Benford? If they can't, if they lose to a good Florida team tomorrow, which is still playing for its tournament life, you watch my word. The committee's going to find a way to drop LSU to the 4 line when I don't think there's any reason that should happen. Just trust me. If it happens tomorrow, we'll be talking about it tomorrow afternoon, and we'll see if I'm right come Monday on B2BS. But my gut tells me there's a chance that they get docked where maybe they shouldn't. The rhetoric, I can hear it now, from the selection committee will be, well, they played a game without their head coach, and look what happened. Team that didn't lose away from home, left the PMAC without their head coach, and, well, look what happened. I could just smell it from a mile away. So there is a lot on the line. You want to be a four seed? Put yourself in a path to play a one seed in the Sweet 16, or can you find a way to win a few games? Climb up, maybe, to the one line. Solidify yourself on the two line, and then you're in a lot better position to accomplish the things in terms of seeding. From there, it becomes a little bit more about the draw. Who are you playing? Where do you have to go? As usual, I would suspect it's better for LSU to be in the East bracket than the West. Those seem to be the two most popular options, though. Tigers on the East Coast could end up playing in Jacksonville. On the West Coast, I don't know, L.A., Phoenix. Somewhere that won't be quite as fan-friendly when it comes to traveling in the postseason. But every fan right now, it seems at least, is keen on Will Wade coaching again. I believe what we confirmed today, in my opinion, that ain't happening again this season. I'd say the chances are slim and none of that happening, or not slim, because that left the building here at the tap room. I think none is the real answer to that question. Hard for me to see Wade ever coaching for LSU again. The better question is, will Javonte Smart play tomorrow? The indication? You may not know until just prior to tip-off, and how maddening that must be for Tony Benford. Unbelievable events that continue to transpire. We'll continue to document them and give you the real takes, the straight takes, tomorrow at 4 p.m. But today, I got to thank our guests. We had four of them. They were dynamite. Technically, we had three. We replayed another. But Billy Napier is always welcome in this house, so we'll thank him for his interview. Coach Kane Guidry of the Rain High Wolves, good enough to join us at the tap room, as was Jeff Horchek, Pospot 2 and Middays on KLFY, and our friend Hunt Palmer, podcast guru for 104.5ESPN.com. We covered a lot of ground today with Hunt, Jeff, Kane, and the interview with Billy. If you missed any or all of it, highly recommend that you go on demand. Two ways to do it. Go to the website, 1037thegame.com. You can click on demand. You can also go to the free 1037 The Game mobile app. Tap on demand. Listen to sectioned out interviews. This entire B2BS program. Whatever you need, whatever you want, at your leisure. I'll thank all of you for listening, calling, interacting on social media. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love, and you've been listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. The show is over. The music's about to start, and so are the good times at the Tap Room River Ranch.